Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and on this show, we give you expert sex advice, relationship strategies, and more. We are back after our summer break. The last five episodes were reruns. I have better word. Encore. That's the sexier word. Encore presentations of older episodes from our archives. You can find our complete archives over at pleasuremechanics.com, where you can also sign up for our free mini course to get started right away. Go to pleasuremechanics.com/free. We had quite a summer. It was epic. I'm not even going to bog you down with all the details, but the bulk of our summer was spent in Portland, Oregon, where we spent 7 weeks taking care of my older sister as she welcomed a new baby into the world. She's 40 and having her first kid, and she runs a few busy restaurants, and they needed some extra support. And so we went out there and cooked and cleaned, and I hung out with her in the hospital for a week as she had the baby and got through some minor medical issues. And yeah, it was crazy. 7 weeks with family.
Yeah, it's a really interesting experience to spend time with a woman in late pregnancy, through birth, and then the postpartum period. In our culture, we don't have a lot of time and space to really take care of women postpartum. In a lot of other cultures, it seems to be a focus. And in our culture, we're really baby-focused and not as focused on the mother once the baby arrives. And I think that women need a lot of support in that moment in life. And so it felt really special and important to go be there and just literally serve her so that she could just be with the baby and hold the baby and take care of her and learn how to be a mom. And we just fed her nutrient-dense food and did her laundry, and it was full on living in someone's home doing that. But I think it's a really important role, and it was partly out of our commitment just to women's bodies in all stages of life, from ecstasy to birth to recovery from birth. And I'm glad we did it, and it was intense, and it's amazing to be home. We love our home.
Well, we came back from that trip and then turned right around and went on a 2-week personal retreat up to our favorite Canadian island. If you've been with us a long time, you've heard us talk about this place before. It's been in my family for 4 generations, and I grew up going there, and it's just this beautiful, simple little lake house on this gorgeous lake, and we get to just be with the water and the wind and revive. And that was super important after a harder trip and a trip of service. And so it was really nice to have family time, and now we're back and have 3 months of life logistics to deal with and laundry up to our ears. But it was a season well spent, I think. And there were definitely some insights. We thought about doing a whole episode just about our experience in Portland, because there's something about going to a different city that has a different sex culture that wakes up different parts of your sexuality. And I think this is something we're mostly blind to, because you live in your culture and your sexuality kind of exists day to day. But when you go to such a different place with a different culture and your sexuality is treated different, it reminds you that our sexuality lives and breathes and changes and grows and responds to the place we're in. And the place you choose to live and the places you choose to go affects how you feel about your sexuality. And so just briefly, Portland, Oregon is land of lesbians. There are so many queer women there. And we live in a place in New York State where there's a lot of gay men. And we find our community there, and we have a few lesbian mom friends, but you don't go to the grocery store and get hit on when you're a queer woman.
By other queer women.
Right.
The older, middle-aged women love you.
Yeah, I tend to get hit on by people that are very sexually irrelevant to me. But in Portland, Oregon, I couldn't pick up an avocado without being hit on. It was kind of constant. And this...
Pick up an avocado?
You know. The co-op. There are a lot of avocados places. But this changes things when you're barista, when you're restaurant server, when people at the grocery store are actively flirting with you and validating your sexuality. I kind of woke up a little bit from a slumber and remembered that my sexuality has currency in these specific cultures and places. And I even thought about slipping out late at night and going to a feminist strip club because they exist there, where like half the dancers are queer women and tattooed and doing hula hooping and fire breathing and all that stuff. I didn't quite get there. I was pretty exhausted after wrangling a toddler and taking care of a newborn all day. But yeah, it was really an interesting experience to feel my sexuality awaken under a new social gaze. And so we invite you to think about that as you travel or as you're in a new space. How does your sexuality exist within that space? Who's validating you? Who's looking at you? Who's flirting with you? Who are you attracting? Who are you repelling? Our sexualities are very social, and the places we occupy have a lot to do with that.
Or who are you interested in? You go to a mountain town and there's more like mountain men around, and perhaps that interests you, you know? So it's
right,
not
you are turned on by the men in Portland a little bit. There's like this healthy outdoors muscular thing going.
Right, there were more attractive men to me than there often are. That was a bit much plaid, but
and man buns and.
I think it's just relevant. You were just talking about how you are seen, one is seen, but I think it's also valuable to think about what you like to look at and be around. And I think this can be a really invisible thing, as you said, for straight people often, because it's sort of, you're in this, like, sea that's, it's totally invisible, but it's really tangible. And I don't know how you really effectively get space from that. Being in a different town can perhaps give you a little flavor, but it's harder to.
Well, I think there's an art to identifying which subcultures your sexuality thrives in. And so if you feel really attracted to, like, cowboys, then go to a rodeo.
See how you feel.
How do you feel in a sea of denim and big belt buckles, and flirt with some cowboys and see if they flirt back? And how does that feel? If you're really into, like, geeky guys, maybe go to a tech conference and flirt up a storm. I think it's just interesting to visit, because ultimately queer culture is a subculture within our greater national culture. And so when you're in a town that has a concentrated queer culture, that then activates part of your identity. And for straight people, I think you need to seek out subcultures that make you feel more alive, creative, attractive, vital, turned on. This is what eroticism is versus sexuality. So even if you're in a relationship and you're not looking to get anyone's phone number or have a fling, you can still flirt and feel your sexuality come alive under the gaze of different subcultures in the context of different social situations. Some people will feel super sexy all dressed up at a cocktail party wearing heels. I would feel completely out of place, but put me in a sea of dykes and I am happy. So I think it's about finding where you fit into specific subcultures, what costumery turns you on, what kind of activities, and start seeking out those places to feed your sexuality. Because I definitely came home from Portland feeling a little more swagger, because my sexuality was validated every day as I walked around the world, and our family was seen. You know, I walked around holding Charlotte's hand and with our daughter, and all these other queer women were validating us through their gaze. And that's a powerful thing, and that's something you can give the gift of to other people, people you find attractive and inspiring. Meet their eye and smile, or give them a compliment, and that's kind of a gift we can pass on to one another. All right, so we're back. We have new podcast episodes for you coming up every week. We have some new exciting things we're going to be launching at the end of this year. We spent our time away really going meta, as I said, taking a really big, broad picture of where we're at with Pleasure Mechanics, where we want to go, our new offerings. It's all very exciting, and it will all be coming to you via this podcast in the coming weeks. So please stay tuned. On today's episode, we want to talk about spontaneous sex. This is a myth, a question we get asked about a lot. We're going to start with a question submitted by a listener, which also reminds me, I got a ton of email this summer and didn't have time to answer any of it. So I have a huge, huge inbox queue with a lot of your questions and emails, and I will try to get back to you as soon as I can, but I'm a little backed up, so have some patience. But here is one we got submitted at the beginning of the summer, and we're going to answer it now. All right.
Monica writes and says, "Dear Pleasure Mechanics, my husband found you about 6 months ago when my relationship was really at a standstill. I never enjoyed sex the way we'd been having it, but didn't really know what to ask for. He hated that I wasn't enjoying it, so he stopped initiating. Before finding you, we didn't have sex for about a year, and we were both kind of giving up on it. Then, through the magic of Google, he found you."
Woohoo! Yay!
"And signed up for the foreplay course."
Double yay!
"Your course helped us start more conversations, and I was able to ask for the kind of warm-up I now know my body needs before I can enjoy intercourse. Turns out he was more than happy to provide once I was able to ask. For this, I thank you. I hope I'm not pushing my luck here by asking for more help. My question is about spontaneous sex. Now that I know I need lots of time for warm-up, does that rule out quickies? Is spontaneous sex ever an option? Thanks again for all your help. Monica."
Mm-hmm. All right, Monica. So you are not alone in this question. More and more people are realizing they need long, leisurely warm-up, especially after transitioning from a stressful day. They want full-body touch, massage, foreplay, all before intercourse. But where does this leave quickies and spontaneous sex and morning sex? Because most of us are busy. And so how do we fit long, luxurious lovemaking into our lives? Good question.
Great question. One I think many are struggling with or trying to figure out.
We did cover spontaneous sex in episode 154, back when we were doing the Just the Tip episodes. Do you remember those? Where we would share excerpts from our favorite sex books with you. We did an episode on spontaneous sex featuring the advice of Esther Perel, who's an amazing sex therapist and author. And she talked about the myth of spontaneous sex, and again, this cultural creation of just spontaneously falling into ecstatic sexual intercourse, and how we need to change that myth and that expectation so people don't feel as broken. So definitely check that one out in our archives. It's episode 154, and you can find it at pleasuremechanics.com. But today I want to go beyond establishing it as a myth, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but go beyond that into strategies of creating the spontaneous energy and the excitement of spontaneous sex without the pressure of quickie intercourse.
First of all, we really believe there's no such thing as spontaneous sex. Mind-blowing, I know. But if you think about when you have had the experience of spontaneous sex, or in your imagination, when you imagine spontaneous sex, there may, if you look at it a little closer, be a long period of anticipation, of looking forward to what might happen, of perhaps dressing up, of preparing your body as if you're going to be in the presence of somebody that you would...
Yeah, even if you go to a party and have a one-night stand, that's not spontaneous. You got ready for the party, you prepared your body, you were in a specific headspace. It's not very often that you, like, slip and fall on a dick. You know? Like, it just doesn't happen, like, whoop, now I'm having sex. The idea is that we need to prepare our bodies...
That was funny.
We need to prepare our bodies for sex. We need to prepare our minds for sex. Sex is a big, intimate act. Even in a long-term relationship, you have to create the conditions that your body is ready to engage in a sexual encounter of any kind. Again, when we say sex, we don't mean intercourse. We mean all kinds of sex, all the different ways we can pleasure one another. And the good news is you can bring a lot of spontaneity into your sex life without having the mythical spontaneous sex. Mm. And this myth is propagated chiefly by movies where, you know, a couple will just, like, be turned on by each other, kiss, kiss, and then immediately they're thrusting in bed and it fades to black and they live happily ever after. Doesn't work that way in real life. So how do we bring the spirit of spontaneity? Because that's what I think a lot of people want, is the excitement and the spirit of, like, I'm a sexual being and I'm ready for sex and I can meet my partner in that space and be ready to engage, and it doesn't have to feel like all this work to get in the mood for sex. People want the idea that they feel desire and they feel attractive and they're kind of in that state of living as a sexual being and thus are ready for spontaneous sex. Don't you think? It's kind of like a feeling state in your body more than it's like, I have 3 minutes and I want to have sexual intercourse.
Right. It's kind of that being taken over by this exciting erotic vitality.
And often in the beginning of relationships, you might have had sex the night before and then you have a sleepover and you wake up the next morning and you're excited about the person. And so before you leave for work, you have a quickie again. Or you're coming home from work and before you even, like, get your briefcase on the couch, you're, like, kissing and are into each other. And that experience of lustiness and of, like, being ever ready for one another, that is a chemical addiction to one another that happens at the beginning of relationships. There are specific chemicals and hormones that are circulating through your system that makes you crave one another and makes having one another deeply satisfying. Those chemicals and hormones fade away over time, and yet I think many of us long for the high of seemingly spontaneous sex. So the good news is we can create that, and we can create that in a way that respects the body's need for warm-up and being in a sexual space before being penetrated. That's the key here, is that people don't endure quickies that their body isn't ready for in the name of satisfying some mythical idea of what sex should look like. So that's kind of our baseline, is never be penetrated before your body's ready for it. Don't endure anything in the name of pleasure. Those strategies don't tend to work. Here's what does work. Spontaneous affection, spontaneous eroticism, creating a culture within your relationship where you're validating your sexual connection, you're expressing desire and attraction to one another over time throughout the days. And so all of that foreplay that if you were just starting from cold, like if you haven't seen each other, well, that might create its own charge. If you've had busy weeks and you're like, all right, we have a sex date and we're both tired, you would have to spend a lot of time to warm up. Instead, you can create the culture in your relationship where you're staying warm, so it's easier to get hot later. We've talked about this before. The metaphor works. Embrace it. You want to stay warm so it's easier to get hot. If you keep a pot of water on a simmer, you can bring it up to a boil in no time. If it's an ice cube, you're going to be around that campfire for a while. So that is the strategy here. It's how to spread out your foreplay, how to spread out the affection so you're more likely to be in a state closer to readiness when you do have the excitement and opportunity for spontaneous sex.
So you mentioned allowing for spontaneous affection and flirting and eroticism. So that is really allowing for moments of turn on, for moments of connection, highlighting to each other anything that feels erotic, beautiful, sexy about each other, about life, and harnessing those moments and not exaggerating them, but highlighting them, really like taking them in and letting them be a moment of connection, of erotic connection.
Right. So you can amp up these moments. So if your wife is leaving for work and she looks nice in her suit, you could be like, have a nice day, honey. You look nice today. And that's fine, but it's not terribly erotic. But if you say, don't you leave this house without giving me a kiss, and then you pull her in and throw your arm around her waist and kiss her well and say, your ass looks so good in this suit, I can't wait to see it out of it later. Or whatever. Whatever fits with your relationship. that's a more erotic way to say goodbye to your wife in the morning. And she's going to carry that with her. She might think about it later in the day. She might send you a text. And you keep that erotic charge going over time. When I was thinking about this, I was having the image of, like, rechargeable batteries, right? And you can recharge them all at once by leaving it plugged in overnight. But it also works if you charge it and take it out and charge it and take it out. Eventually, it will get fully charged. It might take a little longer in total, but you have the opportunity throughout your days to instill a little bit of erotic charge into your relationship. So when you come home that night, you've set the stage, and it might not be that night, it might be two nights later, but you've done, I don't want to call it work, you've created the culture in your relationship where you both feel attractive, you both feel desired, you feel affection, your physical touch is alive. And that creates more opportunity for spontaneous sexual encounters of whatever variety. How else do you experience spontaneous affection?
Well, I think there's this really interesting distinction between spontaneous sex and quickies.
Right.
Because I think that in our culture, we think of them as the same thing, but they're actually two separate things. So let's just break it down real quick.
So the image of a quickie is, like, overcome by desire, you pull down your panties, jump on the top of a washing machine, and he thrusts inside you for 3 minutes and it's over. This is what Hollywood tells us is fun. Some people really like quickies. Some people, I'm not gonna, like, totally bash the quickie. I've done that in the past and then heard from people who are like, I love quickies, it's my favorite kind of sex. Great. For a lot of people, it doesn't feel as good as it wants to. You don't get the full body warm up. You don't really get vaginal lubrication, or you don't get aroused. Like, your vagina might not be ready. And I often think, like, if men had to have anal quickies, they would see how hard this can be for women. Like, you don't just bend someone over and put something in the butt. And we shouldn't do that with the vagina or even the mouth. The body needs to desire being penetrated. And it often takes time to build that desire up. So the idea of a quickie is, you know, I think less than 5 minutes, 10 at the most. Because if you get into 10 minutes, that's how long a lot of people's sex takes when they're, like, doing all the things, which, you know. I don't want to time shame people here because I know people are busy and they don't have time for, like, 2-hour tantra rituals. That's not what we're going for.
But there is some evidence that women's bodies take 20 minutes to 30 minutes of concentrated affection and touch and stimulation before they're anywhere near ready for penetration.
Right.
So there's building evidence that is what is needed before the body can be ready to be penetrated.
Right. So we're not speaking against individual preferences here. We're speaking against a sex culture that's not designed around women's pleasure or around the person being penetrated's pleasure. And we need to shift that. Like, sex doesn't start when the person gets an erection. Like, we need to shift our understanding about how the body is prepared for sex and penetration. Okay. So quickies, short, 5 minutes, very little full body touch, very little preparation of the genitals through fingers and mouth and full body touch. It's more of just like, ooh, we're erect, let's get it in and get it over with.
But I think that there is an emotional and mental stimulation that happens from that. That is what people are really going for.
Right, and that can be turn on enough for some people that their vagina is so ready as soon as someone wants them.
Yeah. But what I was going to say is that if you're going for that mental and emotional turn on, that, like, we want each other so much that we want to do something right now, you can have an erotic moment that doesn't involve full penetration, that is still really sexy in your mind and heart and body, but that isn't requiring full penetration. So you can have a really sexy erotic moment spontaneously.
So spontaneous, quickie,
non-penetrative
sexual encounter.
Use your imagination for what that could look like. It could look like anything.
S-Q-N-P.
But, like, on the washing machine, you can do a million different things.
Yeah, I wish quickies more involved, like, 5 minutes of cunnilingus, that'd be good for a lot of women.
Right.
And if you want to express your desire and your partner has an erection and, like, wants some sexual encounter, you can give them a quick spontaneous hand job or a quick spontaneous blow job. It's really about what your body feels authentically ready for in that moment and how much time you have. Because the other thing, as you said, as we're differentiating between spontaneous sex and quickies, is you can have spontaneous sex and stretch it out for 3 hours. Right? Oh, like, man. You might not be planning on having sex that night. It's not your planned sex date night, but the kids went to bed a little early. You're both feeling good. Have spontaneous sex and then make it last. So I think pulling apart these ideas between spontaneous sex and quick sex, and then again pulling apart quick sex and quick sexual intercourse, all gives you more options. And that's really what we try to do in so many of these podcasts, is break down these ideas of what sex is supposed to look like and give you many more options for authentic, pleasurable sexual encounters on your own terms. And so back to Monica, she's discovered what her body needs. The foreplay course allowed them to map out ways to prepare her body for sex. They're enjoying sex again. That is such a big win, and we're so honored to be a part of it. Thank you for sharing this. And it doesn't take other options off the table. And I think this is what happens for a lot of people when they discover something that really works. There's almost a contraction after that expansion of thinking, like, but all the other sex that we've been having hasn't been good enough, or we don't want to do any of those other things again. And now that you know one thing that works for your body, you get to explore more things that work for your body. So does spontaneous sex work if you've been, like, fantasizing about sex all day and then you come home and you have 20 minutes? Like, can you make that work by getting yourself in the mood? Can you make spontaneous sex work if you wake up a little bit earlier than your husband and start masturbating? And then by the time he's stirring, like, you're already halfway there. If spontaneous, quick sex is important to your relationship and fits into your schedule, then there are ways to kind of back engineer it to make it work for you as a couple. And I don't want to focus completely on the woman's body getting ready, because men need preparation too, and they need to feel in the right zone, and different things work for different guys. You might find that going to the gym spikes your testosterone and you come home horny. Work that into your day. So it's really about mapping out what works for your body, what works for your relationship and your schedule, knowing that those schedules change 6 times a year, it feels like. And then communicating about what feels fun, what feels exciting, what feels real to you in that moment. So we are not taking quickies off the table. We're not taking spontaneous sex off the table. We just need to look again at what those things mean and make them meaningful to you.
And find what would be authentic and pleasurable and erotic for you. Because we are all so different. You've mentioned a couple of times, just sort of in an offhand way, scheduled sex. And I just want to speak to that for a minute, because I think in long-term relationships, creating time for eroticism is really important and becomes a bit of a juggling act for many people based on their needs, their timing, all these things we've been talking about. So we do really recommend this notion of having scheduled time for togetherness. So if it feels too intimidating or too messed up to you to think about scheduling sex, think about scheduling time together and do what feels right to you in that moment, in that block of time. But what's important is that you're setting aside and prioritizing time for the two of you to put away screens, to pay attention to each other, whatever feels right in that moment, whether that's massage, just talking, going for a walk, cuddling, maybe having sex, maybe not. But taking and blocking out time is important, because otherwise it gets lost in our lives of so many things to do.
And you can't wait for spontaneous sex. That's the other piece to this. To scheduling date nights, to scheduling erotic time and massages. You can't wait for both of you to spontaneously be in the mood and then fall on each other's dicks.
I think that is what a lot of people are waiting for. Like, that is the story and the myth that we all believe, that that is how good sex happens. And so when it wanes over the years, we're left thinking, what the hell is wrong with our relationship? We don't desire each other anymore. No, we are not creating a container. We're not creating a sacred space and time that we are ready to pay attention to each other and then see what happens. It's really different. We just have to be more proactive and take control of our sexuality and prioritize it, because it matters so much. And when we don't, it just gets lost. And it's not that there's anything wrong with your relationship. It's just what happens in relationships. It's just what happens. And so we have to actively work to create something else. But that doesn't mean there's anything wrong or broken in your relationship. It just means you're being proactive.
So I think the key here, whether you're scheduling sex dates, whether you're having spontaneous sex, whether you're having quickies, whatever your sexual schedule is looking like nowadays, is to focus on making it pleasurable and authentic, getting rid of the scripts, getting rid of the we should do this to be a happy sexual couple. Like, all of those cultural messages are broken. And so we need to start from the ground up and ask ourselves, what does my body want in this moment of life? What does my body want with this partner? And how do we ask for what we want? And that's the core of this message, is through the foreplay course, you were able to develop a language and develop new skills to give your body what it wanted to have the sex that you guys were already capable of having together. You were in a stuck place in your relationship and you sought out the resources to transform that moment and come up with a new language for asking for what you want. And it sounds like one or both of you is wanting spontaneous sex. Like, I'm not sure where this question came from, but maybe your partner wants more spontaneous sex. Or maybe you do, now that you're having sex that's really enjoyable, you want to have it more often and don't see the time for that in your busy schedule. So it's really about assessing your life, assessing your sexuality, and coming up with strategies to get more pleasure, to have more connection with your partner, to feel good together in the ways that work for you right now, knowing that's going to change. And that is how you create a long-term, sustainable sexual life, right? It's not all that new relationship energy rolling over and fucking in the morning. Sometimes it's going to require a little more planning. Sometimes it'll require doing different things with your bodies to pleasure one another, but it all counts and it's all important. And it's all a valid way to express yourself as a sexual being. So we hope that was helpful. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com for our complete podcast archive. And while you're there, check out our online multimedia courses like the foreplay course. Your sexual breakthrough is waiting for you at pleasuremechanics.com. And use the code SPEAKINGOFSEX for 20% off the online course of your choice. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.